Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hello, everyone. This is Mary Lurson. I'm Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, and I'm here with our Talking Up Music Education podcast on day four of NAMM Showtime in Anaheim, California, here in a California torrential downpour. So we're in a nice, safe, dry place in our hotel next to the convention center. I do need to give a shout out to our friends at Vocal Booth, which did provide us with a wonderful sound booth, which we've been in the sunny days outside. But we wouldn't want to be there today, floating away down Harbor Avenue between the convention center. So I have very special guests here, Kathy Fletcher, the National Program Director for Turnaround Arts, and David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, also PBS NewsHour commentator. Did I do that right?
And a turnaround artist.
Thank you. Absolutely. Welcome, and welcome to the NAMM Show. So my first question to you, David, this is your first time, but Kathy, not your first time.
Not my first time.
But what are your impressions about the NAMM Show and this universe we build once a year in Anaheim, California?
It's the most unusual convention I've ever been at. I go to a lot of conventions. I definitely have to buy more snakeskin pants to fit in here next year.
We're counting on that.
It's really, first of all, there are 85 million guitars hanging around.
Yes.
And I posed with all of them. I got a nice picture of myself with a smoke machine. If anybody wants a smoke machine next year, this is the place
machine,
to go.
The light machine. Really good, right?
Little virtual reality, guitars, French horns. It's just equipment out the wazoo out the kazoo.
Yeah.
But it was the music community that struck me the most. I mean, this is a distinct community. People dress artistically, they dress musically.
And ages, right?
There's many, every single age.
And a lot of suits, let's say. They're in suits. Yeah, did you see the suits?
Conventions I go to.
Well, all right. All suits. Compared to
so
the ones
this was all
wearing.
Black skinny jeans.
No shirts.
No shirts, Def Leppard t-shirts. A number of people in their 60s and 70s still rocking the same outfits they had in their 20s and 30s.
They should maybe rethink that, but it doesn't matter.
But mostly just so many flamboyant people, so many people with very large and distinct personalities here.
I disagree they should rethink it. I feel like to be at a conference where everybody is like being themselves to the nth degree and the amount of joy, it is off the hook. It's the best.
So I wasn't, because I've been so wrapped up with this commitment to our podcast, we've been recording all day, every day, every 30, 35 minute increments. We've been posting every day and we've been just getting tremendous responses. And we've also been Facebook Live. So we're very happy with that. But I haven't spent a lot of time on the trade show floor. I kind of go through to the next meeting, So usually on Saturday or Sunday, the KISS band lookalikes. Did you see any of that? Were there any of that?
I didn't see a KISS lookalike. I saw some AC/DC lookalikes.
Okay, and they come in.
I saw some all girl bands.
They come in a group, and then they actually do posing. It's almost like the tableau.
It is for me who goes to trade shows. You walk into a booth, and you're used to seeing some guy selling, you know, floor tiling, and instead you got some heavy metal band with guys in big blonde hair shaking their heads. So there's a lot more interesting.
Yeah. So now when you know if you go under, because I've worked for NAMM gratefully for 15 years, and we've gone through a recession, we've had a little up and down, you're always trying to lead and guide and support the industry. It's in a pretty vibrant period right now, which is really says a lot to me about our society and what people want to be doing, right? But it's overall, it's kind of a flat industry, you know, small growth up and, you know, a little bit, but people are coming. So I go and I reflect on that floor and I watch it and I see it and I go early in the morning where all the suits are. Right? I mean, they come in, those are the distributors, those are the deal makers, the manufacturers, you know, they're coming in and conducting the kind of the global business. And then it gets more colorful as the day goes on. But I just, what's really there is incredible diversity with enormous compatibility
and
joy. you know,
sort of a French Celtic band, heavy metal, hip hop, yeah. DJs.
Kathy, how many years have you been with us?
This is my third.
Yeah.
Although this year I'm here with an injured foot, so I didn't get to go to the trade floor.
Yeah.
But I want to give a shout out to all of our amazing turnaround artists who joined us here. We had quite a few make it to the NAMM show.
And I don't know how many of them got to experience it, but many of them performed. Here.
Many of them performed, or and I think a lot of them are still over at the trade show, loving every second of it.
Yeah, it's a NAMM is 116 years old this year. It started out as a piano manufacturers association, so we're actually now in this year and next devoting more time to the piano community to kind of go back to our legacy. So I actually have a wonderful staff member, which you know, Eric Abel. You've gotten to know him. And we tease him that he's kind of sometimes has a very strong piano salesman presence, you know, the suit and the very well-dressed, you know, because it's a big diversity, you know, multinational companies of which a music has a division and they're here as a huge footprint. And then, of course, they go all night. So the trade show ends at 6 and then the stages open and then there's stages upon stages and there's stages in the 30, 40 miles surrounding the convention center. So
much great music.
I hope you've had a good time.
Yes. Definitely.
And I hope you come back.
If I'm invited, I'll be back.
You will be invited and maybe we'll get to have you, you know, other people in the industry as well. So we at NAMM have been very fortunate to be involved with Turnaround Arts since its very beginning. And I reflect on those early days because that was at the beginning of the Obama administration. It was very forward-looking times for the arts. And we were very excited about what was ahead because they had a comprehensive arts committee as part of the campaign, something neither campaign had this year. We actually went knocking on both of the campaign doors pretty hard with our transition documents. And saying, where's the committee? Where's the committee? Because it certainly helped the Obama candidacy to have this robust group that cared about this. They're all coming out now.
Seems like kind of a big oversight.
In the women's rallies, right? I mean, we look at all the rallies, not even the post-election rallies that have occurred. So tell us about Turnaround Arts and why it's going to be this wonderful bridge into now that it's into the next few years.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having us, Mary. As you said, NAMM has been an amazing partner since the inception of Turnaround Arts, which is the signature program of the President's Committee on the Arts and the Humanities under the Obama administration. It started off as just a little pilot across the country in 8 schools. You know, everybody knows that the arts are great and that more arts are better than less. But our hypothesis is that the arts can be used as a reform strategy, as something that can really reach and teach kids. We went into the lowest performing schools in the poorest neighborhoods across America, basically to show that the arts can ignite change in traditionally failing schools. Thanks to you, we brought in musical instruments. Thanks to Carrillo, we brought in art supplies. We brought in the best professional development across the country with partners like the Kennedy Center and Wolf Trap. It was a very high-touch pilot project. And as part of this, we had a pretty robust evaluation with Booz Allen Hamilton. Now, as you said, the President's Committee on the Arts and the Humanities members under the Obama administration were some of the most amazing artists in the world, in my opinion. People like Chuck Close, Yo-Yo Ma, Kerry Washington, Alfre Woodard, Sarah Jessica Parker, people who've been doing this work long before they were appointed by the president. And so as icing on top of this cake, this school reform, this whole school reform program, each one of our artists adopted one of our schools for the 2 year. And that turned out to be so much more than we anticipated because schools that have been failing for so long and only in the newspaper because they were the lowest performing again or there was another shooting in their neighborhood to be chosen by Yo-Yo Ma or Chuck Close really helped our schools transform their images. And our artists didn't come in just to take a picture and go away, but really committed themselves to mentoring, to helping solve critical challenges like family engagement, attendance, behavioral issues. And we really saw some incredible metrics of success. Now, the President's Committee isn't really supposed to be running large-scale national education programs, and we felt it would be irresponsible to just throw up our hands and go home. So we designed a shared leadership model where communities around the country applied to be part of Turnaround Arts. And in the past 6 years, we've gone from 8 to 68 schools. We're in an adjudication process now, bringing on another 15 to 20. And we are delighted to announce that we have transferred over to the Kennedy Center of the Performing Arts as our new home for Turnaround Arts. And they do have an incredible history of running large-scale, effective education programs. And so we're really grateful to be able to deepen our implementation and sustain well into the future.
And they're a very emblematic institution.
They are.
They have a wonderful history, and I hope they have some stability for the program, because as a federal monument, right, and its programming, and its board that oversees so many things. How many schools before the right? Currently 60.
68 right
68,
now.
68, which is how many music education grants we have. We have to keep up.
That's right. And I also want to say, as part of this program, you know, it's not just that NAM gave us instruments, but also really taught our music departments how to be a music department. You know, in Lame Deer, Montana, for example, they hadn't had a music teacher in over a decade. And not only did they get a music teacher, but they got instruments. They got training on how to refurbish instruments and how to store instruments and how to really design a high-quality standards-based music program. And I'm happy to announce, by the way, that that school just had their graduation of kids where we started 6 years ago last year, and their graduation rates increased significantly.
It's amazing what a few xylophones can do.
And marimbas. Remember those marimbas?
Oh, yeah, I know. And I'll tell you, we learned a lot about those marimbas, because those marimbas are made by a handmaker up in a shop in Northern California. Someone that we didn't even know could be a NAM member, and I think they're a NAM member now.
Amazing.
And all those are kind of hand-tooled, because there's a certain, you know, a teacher wants a certain way of doing things. And we wanted those kids to come to the White House and they couldn't bring their marimbas. So we called that maker and said, just make another set.
And then,
we had to ship it to the White House.
And then you shipped it to Lame Deer, Montana.
Now they have two sets.
And now they have two sets, and those kids rocked the White House talent show. They were amazing.
Yeah. So I want to put on my wish list for this year. I want to go to Lame Deer. I would love to go to Lame Deer.
Let's go.
The Silk Road Ensemble
has made a tremendous commitment. There are turnaround artists in Lame Deer, and they are going to be going there 3 times this year, and they're designing programs with the music teacher there so that year-round they have touch points of connection. And I do plan to go there in the spring. So, David Brooks, you should come with us.
I will. My favorite state.
Yeah.
Montana?
Really?
Who knew?
I was a music teacher for 16 years. And I think I'm looking for my next gig. Ha ha. So, you know, that's always been sort of a dream of mine, to go back into the classroom someday, you know.
In Lame Deer?
Well, who knows where, but, you know, someone might need an old music teacher somewhere, sometime.
Oh, we would take you. We definitely. And by the way, there are a lot of positions for music teachers, and it's a great job.
It's 100% placement out of colleges. We're gathering the statistics right now.
We need more music
because
teachers.
Because we're doing such a great job as advocates. No, we're contributing to the dialogue as advocates. I think school reform is, and we'll talk about the heart, David, right? I think the heart is saying that we need this to have success in education. We need these artistic connections, the essence of Turnaround Arts, right? So, David, when did you jump into this wonderful experience to take your craft?
My craft is not a performing craft. It's a writing craft. But
it's a craft.
But you should see him
it's
dance,
an art.
Actually.
It's a
little known fact about David Brooks.
I tried to do humanities. And so I had learned about Turnaround about a year before I was invited to join, just through Kathy. And had seen a lot and got a glimpse even in Cuba, watching Usher and Josh Bell and some other people do their magic at a school down there. And then was asked to take part in a school in New Orleans with Graham Nash of Crosby, Stills and Nash and Young and various other people. And Alfred Woodard was there, the actress, and we all went down a few months ago. And I think what happens is before the artists arrive, the kids are being prepared. And so it's a long series of weeks of preparation, and they're doing certain things, they're mastering certain skills, and then the excitement builds. And what's interesting is, you know, the Graham Nash was most prominent, I guess, probably in the 60s and 70s, which was probably about 30 or 40 or 50 years before a lot of these kids were born. But A, they get the sense that he's a real artist. B, they get the sense that he's a big deal of some sort. C, they do have Google. And so there's an atmosphere of excitement in the room, in the school, and the teachers all know, of course. And so it becomes not just another day in the life of the school, it becomes an event. And you can feel the electricity, and then he's playing for them, and they're playing for him. And then Alfre Woodard, the actress, is bringing her unmatched charisma into the room and transforming the chemistry of any classroom. And I was able, some of the kids had written letters to the local mayor, Mitch Landrieu. And so I was able to coach them on how to write a letter, more or less a column.
So you were editor.
I was editing for a day. Editing for a day. And then coaching them how to speak it out to the assembly. But to me, frankly, the best class was a discussion class with a bunch of eighth graders. And they were asking tough questions about themselves, about their own failures, their own successes, their own insecurities, the perplexity of being 13, and what I was thinking about, what it was like to be 13, looking back on it from that. And so, you know, I find I teach at a very prestigious college, and just like the kids in New Orleans, the kids that I teach in New Haven, they want dads and moms. They might have dads and moms, but they want more of them. And so if you can go in there and just provide a little parental attention and love, then they respond to that. And it's significant for them and significant for the
rest
of us.
They want a calm, focused conversation.
Somebody who's been through it and can say, listen, I was 13. And if I could go back and talk to myself then, I'd smack myself down on certain things. I'd buck myself up on some other things. And some of the artists is another artist. Some of them go into places where they look just like the kids. And that's super valuable, because if they can see somebody look like them, came from their area and rose up. But in this school in New Orleans, it's pretty much 100% African-Americans. I don't look like those kids. But I think there's some virtue in that, too, because I come from a different part of the country and a different, you know, I come from a city, but not that city. And so I can talk about different possibilities, different things that are out there that maybe they don't see every day.
I think the other important thing are having expectations. You know, a lot of kids say nobody, you know, we always ask our kids, what's your dream? What's your dream? And to have an expectation, to have a grown up saying, we expect great things from you. You know, we're all here today, as Alfre always says, because somebody showed up for us. And if we can be a cadre of people who show up for these kids, who don't have a lot of people showing up for them, it's really powerful.
That's wonderful. So the whole concept, David, of that every... That was wonderful the way you said that we're just kids looking for another mom, another dad, right? Someone to listen, right? Someone to validate what they're saying and then maybe help weave their way through it. This whole research about, we know about in education now, we know this deeper connection between the head and the heart. And this is actually being codified in neuroscience, brain science research. We've done a lot of this with music. And it's we know with the music research that there's a lot of firing with the cognition and the brain development and the growth of certain areas of the brain because of active music making. Now we say, well, what? So what, right? Well, they're starting to figure this out too. But now the next level of this deep research is all about that it's the emotional connection with the process and the people and the meaning of the music and the soaring of the melody and why certain things happen in the music. And we just go, you know, we just lose it. Like I did in La La Land on the movie several times, right? Was it, why is this happening? You know? So it's also the humanness of the moment, right? You're sitting in a room, you're asking them about their 13-year-old lives and you're listening.
Well, you know, my hero, Bruce Springsteen, had a lyric. He learned more from a 3-minute record than he'd ever did in school. And that was a rare moment of error for Springsteen, because he put in opposition as if they were the two opposite things. And they're not actually, that the record is the emotional enticement you get from music or from any performing art is what fires, keeps you vivid and makes your mind open for memorization. And Springsteen was 20th century guy, but Plato was 3rd century BC guy, and he actually understood it better, that when you're teaching kids, he said the first thing you should do is introduce them to a beautiful face. And they say, oh, that's beautiful. And then say, well, there's a better kind of beauty, which could be musical beauty, and or just a beautiful song or a beautiful piece of art. And then you could say, oh, but there's an even better kind of beauty, which is a beautiful idea. And then you can teach them about the beauty of an idea. And then there's an even better kind of beauty, which is justice, social justice. And then there's an even better kind of beauty, which is the perfect beauty of the world. And so when Plato taught about education, it was the ladder of the beauties. And he knew that the arts were very much intermixed with the intellectual and the spiritual. And they were all, he said, just find beautiful things and climb that ladder.
So you're going to stay with Turnaround Arts, I think, for a while?
As long as they'll have me, yeah. It was so fun to go back with a big assembly. I'd love to go back without an assembly and just sit in the room.
And just mentor and just work.
We're going back in May.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, so much of my pull in my lifetime back to, I mean, let's face it, the work that we're doing now with advocacy and policy, leading a national discussion and all of this, it's wonderful work, but it lacks in that intimacy sometimes. And I know many times people talk about when they actually go back and work in a school, there's been something that they have just craved, right?
And if I could say that, I mean, I'm not as big a performing artist as a lot of the people in Turnaround, but one of the hard things about the job is that if I write a column, a lot of people see it, but I have no clue who they are. If I give a speech, I see a crowd, but I don't know who they are. But one of the things I love about teaching is I actually get to know somebody else's first name on the other end. And so interaction is, you know, for some of these big stars, they don't get interaction, they get performance. And so Turnaround gives a little interaction.
And they manage their enterprises, and they're managing the layers and layers and layers of it, because celebrity and artistry at that level requires a lot of organization and business. And then all of a sudden you go back and go, it's where it all comes from. It's what it all is.
It's also really nice. A lot of our more high profile artists, as David was saying, the kids don't really know who they are. And that's beautiful for people. It's humbling sometimes.
Yeah, I kind of mentioned that last night. Remember, right? You are coming in just with the purity of what you know and the purity of who you are.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's important.
The other thing a lot of our artists have in common is they were these kids. You know, a lot of our artists came from struggling backgrounds, and they know what it feels like, and they really get that. And it's really powerful for them to come back and say to kids, I know what you're going through, and I made it, and so can you. And you can do what you love.
Within the last couple of hours, we had an interview with a group that we hosted here. And their group is called the Accidentals. And the last one to turn 21 turns 21 in March. So they just all have turned 21. And they have been on the road already for 2.5 years, and they just signed with Sony Masterworks. And they were the best of South by Southwest, and they've had, you know, they travel with a panel truck and they've got a driver now, and they've got a manager, and they've got a roadie.
Their parents, I hope.
Well, their parents started them out. They were in Northern Michigan, and they would pick them up at school at 4 o'clock and drive them to a gig. And one of the mothers happens to be a good marketer, and they all were committed to the kids. They really, but I want to tell you, you know, and I gave them my address. They're all going to come to my house and stay when they're in New York, because that's kind of, they stay in Airbnb so they can stay in people's houses. They're just babies kind of, you know, and they all admitted to a person that they're really, really shy and they're really introverts. And yet they are just can't resist this big life that they're building. And they performed for us and our college students, and they were just magnificent. So it's it was just so refreshing to be with them and to feel their energy. But we forget that a lot of our performers, you know, are coming from a very quiet, silent, special place.
Mark Anthony is one of our artists, and he stuttered so horribly nobody could understand him growing up. And it wasn't until he started to sing that he could, you know, it made his stutter go away. And a lot of artists are so shy that, you know, Citizen Cope, we were with last night, and he did that remarkable performance, and he's super shy, and so he sings. And a lot of our children, we were just in the hallway talking to Bernie Williams about a child at his school who came here from another country and he wouldn't speak. And then he got one of the leads in Willy Wonka, the school musical. And now you cannot shut the child up. And he's got the most beautiful voice, and he's made friends, and he's popular. And we hear that over and over again. It's another way for people to come out of their shells.
So this is a big curve now. All right, we're going to get in our little issues car, and we're going to get put on the blinker light, and we're going to go. All right. So we just talked about all this. And we'll come back to something warm and cozy at the end. But we talked, we need to do this because David Brooks is here. And when do we get to talk about this, right? So we just talked about this phenomenal validation of all these great experiences, the richness of the heart, the richness of the human connection. You know, every kid needs a mom and dad. And we just talked about, and now we've just elected our president. And now we have entered into the next administration, the first of my adult lifetime, where I feel no thread. I mean, I look back at my 30, I lost how many voting, been involved, been paying attention, been concerned with, you know, federal, state policy, even a local school district policy, that I felt a thread of connection into the arts and culture side of what we are about. I don't, where's the thread, David Brooks? Do we have a thread? I mean, even in the days when McCain was being elected, we went to that campaign and they gave us a two-liner, but we found the person and because we were a nonpartisan platform that we're trying to just inform. So,
the guy owned casinos, so they had
which means he hired decorators
or magicians. I don't know those guys who play with the White Tigers. I don't know who those guys are.
Or the musicians that played in the cocktail lounges. Yeah. Is that?
Well, I guess the one thing, you know, they have stated their intent to eliminate funding for NEA and National Endowment for the Arts and National Endowment for the Humanities. But I think there's the one thing to emphasize is there's a long way between that intent, which basically every Republican Congress has already had that intent.
And we've seen that before. That kind of doesn't rattle our cage as much. Yeah. And we sort of know what to do.
Yeah.
You know?
And so I think, and second, it's important to emphasize that they don't yet know what to do and know where their priorities are going to be. That compared to other administrations at this point, they're certainly very ill-staffed. I mean, I don't mean poorly staffed. They just don't have many people. And they haven't really nominated even on the State Department down to the second or third person. So they've got a lot of filling in to do and not a lot of people to fill in with. And third, it's not clear where the president's attention is going to be. There's going to be a lot of incoming and who knows where this will fall. The one thing I'll say is there's clearly going to be an emphasis on charter schools and more room for charters and probably more charters. And the one nice thing, I've spent a lot of time with the charter school people, and it's a great big diverse community. But the one thing I'll say about the community is that it used to be in vogue to be a, quote, no excuses school. KIPP academies and other things like that, success academies. And there was relatively little arts education going on because they were focusing on just the basics. But as you talk to those people, they're all moving away from the no excuses model. They're getting a little more looser in how they regiment the school. And I think they're appreciating the diversity of the student person. And so I do think, A, there's just tremendous diversity in the charter school community to try different approaches. And then I do think some of those that have been more the basics are moving off that model. So the action may shift away from Washington to the charter systems or to something else. But I'm not sure there's going to be a diminished need for arts and music education.
Well, I think our voice has to be continue to be very strong, right? I mean, we've always taken the empirical data forward into all the policymakers. We've been involved with the charter school organizations. We kind of tagged off for a few years just because of other priorities. The National School Board Association, we've played in those arenas, which is, again, why we think we've participated to the strength of the dialogue, you know, but we have to continue. But again, we don't know what's behind the curtain. You know, which drapery pull do we pull, you know, to find out what's behind the curtain? And I guess you said it, only time will tell, right?
They just don't know. It's very hard to prognosticate when they themselves don't know. And you know, somebody, Lee Greenwood, leans over to Donald Trump one day and it could all change. One influential artist.
And I think saying that there will be a consolidation or a reduction of the National Endowment of the Arts, I don't think they understand what they're dealing with. Because with the re-grant program, really goes down into those core, very small grants into small communities where the base is, where their base is. So I think they don't understand the structure of the re-grant and really how small amount of money it is. So I guess we're being sort of generous in our view at the moment.
Hopeful. I mean, hopeful. I do work at NPR every week, and the money that comes out of the federal government for NPR does not go to the WNYCs or the WETAs or the KCRWs. You know, it goes to the town in Plattsburgh, New York State. So
right, takes care of right where the grassroots are.
Right.
So how about you, Kathy? Do you have thoughts about this? Well, I know you do, but
yeah,
what would you like to put on air?
I'm going to let David Brooks be the spokesperson on this particular subject so I don't get myself in any trouble.
Okay, I understand. When we all dusted ourselves off after the election, and it was a bit of dusting off, right? It was maybe we're also saying that the Trump administration really wasn't prepared to win, right? I mean, but you would think maybe they had somebody working on a book, on a binder.
He got
somewhere.
Fired, though. That was Chris Christie.
Right. you remind me, yes. But very quickly, I have to say, for myself, and my personally, I just could have jolted myself out of taking it. I didn't take it personally. I didn't feel bad about it. I felt we will work with what we have, and we will work forward because of what we care about so much. I mean, Turnaround Arts has moved to the Kennedy Center. It's an esteemed and wonderful historical place. You're there, Kathy. You have wonderful colleagues there. This cadre of artists are together. Our statistics are telling us that music education is really strong in
many places.
We're
building more evidence that it works.
We are, you know, our 20 years of research is just multiplying. There are more people engaged in this product, this research topic and its research outcomes. So, you know, if anything, it was an acknowledgement that this has never been easy. So now it's just a different version of not being easy. We just go back to be advocates and we go back to make our case.
And you have to think any administration, once they start paying attention, will see the value and the beauty. There's no downside. We need children who have critical thinking skills, who are confident, who are prepared to go into the world. By the way, I loved your grand rally yesterday. It was my third, but it was my favorite. And I love listening to Keb Moe and Bernie Williams talk about...
They had a nice riff, didn't they?
They were great.
They really had fun with each other.
Talking about how the music, you know, without music, who knows where those two would be? And look at what they've contributed to our world, you know? So I think we have to keep telling our story, building the evidence, telling our story, and then getting organized to make sure that we don't lose any ground.
I also think that we've gone, maybe I'll get myself into a little gray area here myself, because I am a nonpartisan lobbyist for what I care about. You know, if it's a Republican mayor, a Democratic mayor, you know, I mean, this is boom, right? We go right up to the door, the steps of the state house is where we sit and we're working at. But I do have to say that in this negative period that we've gone through, right, this kind of figure, there was a defensiveness about not wanting to give their side the win, you know, and then everybody kind of has to get over that a little bit, especially if we want our kids to win, well, we might have to give them the win, you know, and the win politically is that, yes, they did fund, maybe they raised national endowments for the arts by 1%, or they have a matching program for private donations. Now they got this whole new crowd, you know, that has this capacity. You know, if they want to privatize, well, maybe double with private funds, but look at all the things that we can do. But there's this sense that we're kind of so mad and so hurt that everything, that we can't give them any wins. We have to kind of hold them accountable to a failure that we really want them to have. And this is part of the kind of the healing process. David, I'm looking right at you if you understand what I'm saying, right? It's part of the healing process. No, and I will never give you, I will hold you accountable to the failure that I'm insisting that you will have, because that's how much you have backed me away from, you know, this is tough, right? This is.
Well, and you know, the rallies were healing. They were not really a way forward. They're just a way of saying we're still here. But I guess I would say this, you know, I've spent the last year really in Trump world, Trump terror parts of the country, in New Mexico, Texas, Nebraska, Alabama, just every state you can think of. And I think you got to, I try to look at it through the best Trump voter, a person who has no racial bigotry, nothing like that. They just come from a town they deeply love, and that town is just disappearing around them. And their children have just terrible prospects. And their living standards have been pretty much in decline for 40 years. And so they say, I don't really like this guy either, but he's my shot. Mm-hmm. And when you go to those towns, I certainly have spent a lot of time other people call it drinking at a bar. I call it reporting.
Research.
And there's music everywhere.
If there's music.
And, you know, I was just out here in Ontario, California, working class town, which Trump carried. And there was great music, a great thrift shop filled with Americana from 30 and 40 years ago. And it just harkens back to an American culture, and whether it's banjo, guitar, violin, or accordion, or whatever it is, I'm just thinking, going back through scenes in my mind the last year in the hill country of West Texas, this great square dance where people just started dancing in the middle of a Saturday afternoon at a vineyard, in West Virginia at a bar with a live band, a woman singing out 40s standards at a bar in Arizona. And they're human. We're all human, so we like music.
And we're going to keep, celebrating.
110,000 people here. I guarantee you there were a lot of Trump voters here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we're just going to celebrate and push the barriers away, you know, and be positive. Our motto for our advocacy is relentlessly positive. I mean, that's the tradition we're growing. Any final thoughts for our time together? I know you're heading up to LA to be with your Turnaround Arts. You're heading back to New York, hopefully giving you a little post-inauguration break.
A little, yeah. I've got as far away from as possible. So right. Good, but I'm back in it tomorrow.
Yeah, we're so grateful you're here. Final thoughts?
Final thoughts, just listening to you speak. You're so awesome, Mary Larson.
Oh,
and
you're
NAMM
so sweet.
Has been such a tremendous partner, and we're so grateful. Your whole team is so fantastic, and the kind of support you give us to do this work is unprecedented, and we couldn't do it without you. And I just wanted to say thank you so much.
And I pass that thanks on to all of our NAMM members that you're interacting with on that trade show floor, because it's their commitment to us as a community that allows us to have these resources to then go back and create these partnerships. David, final thoughts?
Yeah, we first met in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I'm
quite a circle from there.
Quite a different kind of convention. But I just love it. I do not play music. I do not sing. I do not dance. But for anybody.
He does dance. He's not telling the truth.
Anybody who can get into in touch with the musical community, it's just so much fun and uplifting. Last night, we got to hear some real musicians play for just each other, really. And there's nothing
better
than
that. In 10 minutes, there's a ukulele circle starting over in the member center. So, and our motto is, you know, if you can hold it, you will play it. So,
it's not too late for you.
That's the right size instrument for me.
I can bring a staff member over who will escort you right over there now. thank you, David and Kathy. I hope for many, many more connections along the way, include maybe, you know, a bar in Montana's anywhere. You tell me, I'll show up, okay? And thank you all for joining us for this great episode with Kathy Fletcher, Turnaround Arts, David Brooks, New York Times, PBS NewsHour, Turnaround Artist, for the time that we've had together here at NAMM Show 2017. Mary Larson from Talking Up Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. NAMM.